Welcome to Hype episode 175. My name is Selena. I'm joined by Pam for not our first show of 2018, though that would be a nice round number to start with, but our second show and our first normal show of 2018. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Selena.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am fine. Yeah. Thank you.
Getting ready for your
continental
trip. Yeah.
Yes.
It's happening.
It is happening. I'm so excited. It's Wednesday right now, and next Tuesday, me and my brother are leaving for Canada, Vancouver. We're going over to the Unity Days, the 100 convention. I'm so excited to see Vancouver. I know I've talked about that before, but I've never been to Canada before. I'm so stoked. It's going to be great. And I'm also just happy. Recovering from our listener call-in show last week, which was just so much fun. And I hope all of you guys have had a chance to listen to it, even if you weren't on the show. We had some wonderful people call in and talk to us about pop culture. And it was just such a great way to start off 2018. And it was so much fun. I loved it.
Me too.
Anyway, we have so much news to get through this week, because last week, actually, kind of lucky for us because we had our big call-in show, there wasn't a lot of news to talk about this week. It's just so much entertainment news, and we can't even begin to get to all of it, but we've picked out a few stories that we think are particularly noteworthy, and we're going to be talking about the Golden Globes as well as some big TV events. And then in our Patreon bonus segment, if you are a Patreon subscriber, and you can become a Patreon subscriber for $2 a month over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. This week's bonus segment is actually going to be a commentary of the Merlin pilot. We are officially starting another good thing to start off 2018. We're starting our big Merlin rewatch, and we're beginning with the pilot episode. Don't worry. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, we will be releasing the episodes on the main feed for everyone as well. The commentary is a Patreon exclusive, which means if you are a subscriber on the $2 a month level, then on top of the regular bonus segments and the videos and the contests, etc., you get access to occasional commentaries and extra bonus discussions related to BBC's Merlin. And we're so excited to kick off our big rewatch with you guys over there. So definitely stay tuned to patreon.com/hypepodcast for that. And in the coming weeks, we will be doing discussions of the pilot episode and episodes of season one, either solo discussions, or we're going to break them down like into one or two episodes a week, depending on what we feel like. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm so excited. And if you are not a Patreon subscriber and or you're not interested in our Merlin content, then that is totally fine. You can still listen to the show, obviously, and you can call in, you can write in to us. I'm too used to the... Is this a call-in show now, guys?
No. Every week. It's like, call in and tell us how you feel. Yeah. We could be like Agony Aunt, but for pop culture.
Yes. Yes, I love it. But until that happens, you can write to us in one of several ways, or all the ways, up to you. You can tweet us at HypeableHype. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can follow us on Instagram, which is at HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com, in the podcast section. But I'm not sure the comments are still there. At least I can't see them if they are. So that's not a place that you can leave comments at the moment, but you can still use the other way. So you should be okay. And of course, as we said before, the Patreon is patreon.com/hypepodcast. So we look forward to hearing from you, or reading your words, I suppose. And we look forward to doing all the Merlin stuff. So we hope you guys are excited for that as well. All right. So I have talked enough. It's time to move into How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this week. And our How We Hype this week is going to be all about the Golden Globes 2018. And I'm going to let Pam talk about that.
Oh, my turn?
Yes.
I wasn't prepared for this. Oh my gosh. Well, for those of you that don't know, although I'm sure you do, the Golden Globes happened this past Sunday night. There was a lot of discussion before the Golden Globes about the whole campaign about wearing black and Me Too. Time's Up was a really big thing. And everybody kind of had all eyes on a lot of these really powerful women in Hollywood that were, you know, trying to make a really big statement with going all black. And it was really stunning to see that that so many people participated in this campaign that was started by the Time's Up movement. And the carpet was mostly dark. There was like a handful of people that didn't participate, and that's their prerogative. For whatever reason, they decided not to do so. But so just like as a kickoff to the night, that was really inspiring to see, especially since it was something that happened maybe like 2 weeks before. And there were a lot of people thinking that not many people were going to participate in that. I don't know if you tuned into the red carpet, if you just tuned into the show or you just watched highlights, but that was definitely a huge moment for sure. And I guess we should start off by talking about Seth Meyers, who had a really great monologue. He said before the show started that he wasn't going to hold back on addressing a lot of big issues that are happening right now in Hollywood and in the world, and he kept to his promise. I think my favorite part is that he brought in his segment from the show Jokes Seth Can't Tell and had mm-hmm. some Hollywood actresses take part in that. I think that's a really clever segment, and it's also a really great way, you know, we talk about like what makes a good ally a lot, and a lot of times that has to do with using your platform to amplify voices that aren't often heard. And I just think that segment's a really clever kind of dark comedy way of getting that point across, and I love that he brought that into the fabric of the award show.
Totally agree. I thought his speech was great. I think we talked about before when he was first announced that if they weren't going to get a woman, which was obviously would have been better, I think Seth Meyers is one of the best people you could ask for, because he is very, for lack of a better word, he is very woke, and he is very no-nonsense about that. And I thought he was really funny and really sort of, understated is the wrong word, but he wasn't, I feel like he's very palatable, which is a good thing in this context, because he's able to get some points across very eloquently without being too much. You know, I'm a big fan of his. I thought he did a great job, yeah. And I thought it was a good speech that did a lot to promote others. You know, like it was very clear in the people he chose to highlight in his speech that there was a lot of like diversity and a lot of minorities and stuff that he made sure to highlight. And of course, Oprah was the main one. But yes, in general, I feel he did a good job.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that like in some ways there was never any doubt that he was going to do great. But in other ways, you always have a little bit of cause for concern, because a lot of people are big men on campus, so to speak, when they're on their own stage, but when they get to a stage that's not theirs, they're essentially like a guest there. It's almost kind of like they kind of shrink back and they don't really go for it. And I'm really glad that he stuck to his guns and he went for it. He didn't treat it any differently, like, you know, than he would his own show. And I really mm-hmm. appreciated that. I feel like that's what we needed.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, there were a lot of people, like well-deserving people, that won. Unfortunately, it wasn't a big night for diversity, but I do want to give a big shout out to Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us, even though, you know, we might have some problems with the show. It's really great to see that his performance as Randall continues to be recognized. And he always just gives really, really great speeches. And I thought he had a lot of really wonderful things to say about performing that role, is really kind of shining a spotlight on stories that we don't often see in television, and that's always really inspiring. I was really bummed out that Issa Rae didn't win for Insecure, but I was really happy that Rachel won for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That was a big night for them too, because Amy Sherman-Palladino also picked up an award, and she gave the most Lorelai Gilmore speech ever, which was amazing. And also, like, a lot of really wonderful women, including Laura Dern, use their time up there to highlight women's struggles and the issues at hand right now. And I think that was really wonderful too. A lot of them didn't get played off either. I noticed that they did a really good job of making sure that, you know, the woman especially this year didn't get played off the stage, even if they went a little bit longer, mm-hmm. which I thought was a smart and very necessary choice given the tone of the award show.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Natalie Portman.
Oh my God. She called it like it was.
Yeah. I know that you were, we were both really grumpy about the fact that there were no women nominated in the Best Director category. But also, it's very telling because there was a lot of discussion on Twitter as to like how it was, you know, some people think it was really rude that she took away from the nods that these male directors got. And listen, okay, like that's one way to look at it. But the other way to look at it is like, look, like clearly at least Greta Gerwig deserved to be there because Saoirse Ronan won for Best Actress and Lady Bird won for Best Musical or Comedy. So if a movie picks up two major awards and yet the director doesn't get at least, you know, a nod, that's really telling of kind of like the climate.
And it's also just really telling because so many of these categories are gendered. You know, there's best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress. And then there are the shows that are more general. So I feel like when you have something like director, composer, editor, writer, I know she did win for writer, so that's good, or at least she was nominated. But these categories mean a lot more, and director especially, because director is the top gig. So when you have all these people, women and men, being honored and winning for achievements in categories where there is no competition between the two genders, and then you systematically have men dominating, in this case exclusively dominating, but a lot of time, especially the director category, is almost a male only category, I think it's right for her to call that out. And I'm glad she did. And I'm glad she did it in the way that she did. And I don't think it took anything away from the, like, if they are uncomfortable with that being called out, then in some ways that is admitting that they have an advantage that they don't like being called out on.
Right. No, that's so true. And like, no disrespect to Guillermo del Toro. Oh, I actually saw The Shape of Water last night or two nights ago, and it's beautiful, like, but in his style is so you know,
I love him as a director.
It's beautiful, and where it's like not saying that he shouldn't win, he's not deserving of the nomination, but it's important to note that, you know, the Patty Jenkins of the world, the Greta Gerwigs of the world are just as they should be there too, especially when you look at how big those movies were. And the, you know, the records they broke, Lady Bird was like had the top score on Rotten Tomatoes for the longest time ever. Wonder Woman smashed, box office sales. And it's just really disheartening to know that wasn't enough, especially when you look at even like movies that they got the shaft altogether, like Girls Trip, which also made a lot of money in the box office. Wasn't nominated for anything. It's a shame that Tiffany Haddish didn't even get recognition for her breakout role when you look at, you know, past instances where the Golden Globes has recognized similar comedies like The Hangover, which won a bunch of Golden Globes back when it was nominated. It's a very similar concept. Superhero movies have also been nominated in the past. And so you just kind of wonder why, you know, movies that follow a similar mold and do even better don't get the recognition they deserve. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was a really great night in a lot of different ways for Hollywood. And it was really, I think people walked away feeling really inspired between, you know, all of the women that did win that chose to use their time up on the stage to amplify issues at hand right now. And then Oprah kind of just brought it all home with her amazing speech. And yeah, I mean, I think it was a really good ceremony. I don't know how you felt about it, but I was pretty pleased.
Hopefully this is the shape of things to come. I would love to see something like this at the Oscars.
I know. I mean, I feel like a lot of people walked away from the Golden Globes feeling like, even though there are some things that we'd like to see get better over the years, they walked away feeling pretty good about the state of some things. And then like the BAFTA nominations came out and everybody's like, well, we're kind of back to square one. Last year we had Oscar So White. And we thought that things were going to change and we're back to square one now. And there's no telling what's going to happen with the Oscars. A lot of times, too, we have to remember that it's not necessarily about what the Academy chooses to nominate, more so than it. The root of the problem is that studios aren't greenlighting movies that have opportunities for people of color to get, you know, be able to show us what they can do. So, there's like so, I mean, I feel like we could go on with this forever, but there's so many moving pieces. It's hard to kind of figure out how we start to fix things or make change.
Right. And that was just the final thing I wanted to say on this website. I think it also a sort of weird discrepancy that's happening right now, award show vis-a-vis like the opportunities for minorities, is that ironically enough, a lot of the minority inclusion we're seeing, maybe not behind the camera, but certainly in front of the camera, are in superhero movies and genre movies. You know, so things like Wonder Woman, Black Panther, or Star Wars, or whatever, like they are not included usually in these award shows. You know, they might be for like MTV and People's Choice and stuff, but they're not included here, which, and the superhero shows and teen shows as well. And actually, that's a real shame, because I think we're seeing a lot of diverse talent get much bigger opportunities in those genres as well. And then when you're not seeing, like Wonder Woman obviously was completely snubbed from all of these, and you might say, well, certainly Patty Jenkins deserved to be nominated in the director's category, but she wasn't, because her movie is not the type of movie that is nominated in this type of award show. So I do think that the one of the ways to pave the way for more acknowledgement of diverse talent is maybe to open the door a little bit, like, you know, like Mad Max was like the infamous exception, and Lord of the Rings, like there have been a couple, but yeah, like imagine Wonder Woman being nominated for an Oscar, you know, in something other than sound design, which is where they're usually nodded at.
I mean, like if, and again, like it's hard to talk about this stuff without sounding petty to people that just want to see negativity when you bring up issues in representation in Hollywood. But like, if Dark Knight can be nominated for, you know,
then Black Panther can be nominated.
Yeah, or Wonder Woman can be nominated. Mm-hmm. It's like, or if Lord of the Rings can sweep the Oscars, why not?
Yeah, or A Wrinkle in Time. Like, let's see how that does next year.
That's true too.
Chris Pine is going to be nominated.
Maybe Oprah will give Meryl Streep a run for her money.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so those were the Golden Globes. There's so much more we could bring up, but we don't have all day to talk about this. But if you guys want to add in your thoughts, you can always give us an email or a tweet. We're going to move on to our news lineup now. And we're going to, actually, speaking of superhero movies, we have a relevant story to start with.
Yes. Well, everybody's excited about Black Panther, of course. It's coming out in February, actually, isn't it? So we don't have very much longer to wait for this movie, which is kind of crazy to think about it in that terms, right?
Yes. I'm so excited.
But one of the things, you guys know how I feel about music. Music is like my life. I got so excited when I heard who they had tapped to curate and produce the Black Panther soundtrack, because it's none other than Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar is so amazing. Even if you're not into rap music, I would highly recommend just going online, Googling some of the lyrics to some of his bigger songs. I'm not talking about like Humble, things like that, although they have a place, you know, in time for, there's a place in time for songs like that. But it's just like the way that he writes about real issues is so amazing. And I'm just so floored every time he does anything. Even his performances are so wonderful. So it's really cool to see that Marvel has tapped him to curate Black Panther, which of course is, you know, providing kind of, it's filling that void of representation in Hollywood right now. It's kind of the first time we've seen a Black superhero step into the limelight and be at the forefront of their own story. So it's really great that they've taken one of the most successful and Black artists of these past few years and tasked him with kind of curating the soundtrack and also featuring on it as well. You can actually listen to the first song off of the soundtrack, which is a song featuring SZA, who is one of the huge breakout stars of 2017 right now. The song is called All of the Stars. I did check. It's available to stream for free on Spotify. We also have a link to the audio in the show notes on Hypebeable in the news story where we announced this over on Hypebeable.com. And we're actually going to get the soundtrack, as always, a little bit earlier than the movie comes out. So that's really exciting as well. I think it'll be out on February 9th, and then the movie comes out on February 16th. I've also seen online rumors that we'll be getting a new collaborative track between Kendrick and Vince Staples, who had one of my favorite albums of 2017, Big Fish Theory, if you haven't listened to that yet. 10 out of 10 would recommend. And they worked together in the past as well. So yeah, I'm really excited just to kind of see what he puts on here, who he collaborates with, any new tracks that we'll be getting. And the new TV spot for Black Panther actually features some of the new music. So it looks like it's going to fit in really well with the tone of the film, even if we don't kind of hear any of these tracks in the movie. Because sometimes, you know, you have scores that are featured in the film, and then the soundtrack features a completely different set of songs that are kind of inspired by the story and stuff like that. But either way, I kind of feel like this is a big, big win for everybody that's really excited about Black Panther, and also people that are big fans of Kendrick Lamar, like I am. So,
yeah, this is gonna be cool. Great. This is awesome. And moving on now, we have some more new movie news. This is relevant to our interests. Hashtag Disney's The Merlin Saga, which is an adaptation of T.A. Barron's The Merlin Saga, might be helmed by none other than Ridley Scott. Now, this is interesting. According to Variety, the story was written up by Pam on Hypeable. According to Variety, his production company Scott Free is in negotiations with Disney to produce the upcoming adaptation. We've already written about this on Hyperbole before. It's going to be it's adapted by Philippa Boyens, who obviously co-wrote The Lord of the Rings with Fran Walsh and Peter Jackson. So that's exciting. And the book is actually really interesting. I have the first one. I haven't read any of them. I haven't read the whole series, but I have read the first one, and it's very interesting. It's very rich and imaginative, and it follows a young boy on his journey. It's a young Merlin who is, before he meets up with Arthur and becomes the magician we know and love from the legends, he has all kinds of magical adventures. And Disney is obviously going to tap into this and make an exciting film. I love how Pam made sure to shout out BBC's Merlin, beloved Merlin series, even. Well done.
Do you know why, though? Because yeah. Andrew sent me this story and he goes, can you write this up because you love Merlin? It's relevant to your interests. Oh. And I was like, oh, Andrew, not all Merlins are created equal. So then I was like, I've never read this book. How can I hit my word count? Oh, let's talk about Merlin. Like actual Merlin.
You know what's so funny is that, that when I read this book and when I sort of imagine a Ridley Scott version, the only person that I can imagine playing young Merlin is, you know, the boy that was the young Mordred.
Asa Butterfield.
Yeah, he's maybe a little bit too old to be the young Merlin now, but that's who I see in my head. So that's kind of funny. But it's kind of interesting. Another point to bring up here is that Disney's also working on a live action adaptation of The Sword in the Stone. And Scott has apparently also met with Disney to direct that one. So who knows what's going
to
come
of
that.
So he just really wants to get in on this Arthurian legend hype.
Clearly he does. What do you think about him as a fit for this one? I know you haven't read the book, but you can sort of grasp the... It's very Percy Jackson-esque in tone, I think it's fair to say.
Well, I think Ridley Scott is very versatile as a director. He's kind of done a little bit of everything. And yeah. I wouldn't be mad because he's a great director. At the same time, it's kind of hard for me to, like, you know, again, I have, like, no ties to T.A. Barron's Merlin. But even if, like, Disney said, oh, no to that, but you can direct the live-action Sword in the Stone, I'd be fine with it because he's a great leader. And it would just be fun to see what he does with it. And the fact that he's allegedly met for both projects kind of just really serves to give me hope that he's interested in just taking good care of the legend. So, yeah.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, Ridley Scott, I don't have any particular, like, special feeling about Ridley Scott, but he's certainly extremely competent. And some of the things that maybe give me a little bit more, like, interests me a little bit more is that the kinds of movies that he's made, like Robin Hood and Kingdom of Heaven, if you remember that one, that was a fun one, Gladiator, The Martian, Alien, obviously the Alien movies. I feel like he has a great way of imagining worlds, you know, not only medieval worlds. So obviously that's what's most relevant for this. But I feel like he, unlike many of the other, what you might call like A-list directors or like very style heavy directors, I think Ridley Scott's style is a little bit more gritty and a little bit more not down to earth. Completely the wrong word, not what I'm looking for. But I feel like I would trust his version of this story to have a little bit more substance, you know, whereas maybe some other directors would make it into like this poppy kind of children's movie. And I'm not like particularly, I think that I might like a version of his, like either way, whichever one he ends up landing on, I think I might be interested to see it, especially because he has it's the possibility of it becoming a little bit more edgy than it might otherwise have been.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing about these, like, Arthurian legend retellings, it's like, if you're a fan of these kinds of stories, it's nothing you've never heard before or seen before. So what really draws my attention to adaptations of Arthurian legend is just kind of the creativity behind what they choose to do and how they choose to present it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big reason why I fell in love with BBC's Merlin. So mm-hmm. if another movie show is able to do that, then, you know, and we joke a lot, like, not my Merlin, but like, if they were able to pull me in like that, then I would be all for it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, we have a little bit of big TV casting news here. This is relevant to my interest for sure. Of course, we've heard over the past few months that Netflix is now spearheading the CW's Riverdale spinoff, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It's actually called, what's it called? The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. It's going to be a much darker Sabrina. And we finally know who our Sabrina is going to be. And they've cast Kiernan Shipka in the role, which I think is really great. I actually really love her as an actress. A lot of you will most likely remember her from AMC's Mad Men, where she played Don Draper's daughter, Sally. And I think that this is really, really cool. Before she got cast, there were a lot of people championing for Dove Cameron to play Sabrina. And I was like really into that idea. I think that she's really great. I think she's shown a huge range of what she can do. And I hadn't really thought about it other than that. And I think that they might have been seriously like considering casting her too, because there are a couple of back and forth exchanges between her and the Riverdale showrunner, and also her and the official Archie Comics Twitter account. So it was almost kind of like a red herring in a way that they were interacting so much with her, and then all of a sudden they're like, JK, Kiernan Shipka, your new Sabrina. But yeah, I think this is going to be really fun. It's going to be really fun to see what they do with the series, and I think that she's going to be great.
I agree. I was surprised by this casting news, but I do think that she is a good choice. And it's, you know, she's reminds me a lot of Melissa Joan Hart, right? So like, it's not too
she's also
hard to reach.
Like the right age, you know, she's not really old, which is really nice. Yeah. Like, she's probably a little bit...
God, all those olds.
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, back in the day, it's like Dawson's Creek, everybody that was supposed to be 14 was actually like 27. Yeah. Or whatever. So it's kind of nice to see them casting somebody that's age appropriate for the role too. So it should be really fun.
Should be fun. Mm-hmm. I'm good with this. And staying on Netflix casting news, The Crown has cast, or is close to casting, its Princess Margaret. We already know that Olivia Colman is going to be replacing Claire Foy as Queen Elizabeth, and her sister is apparently, according to The Hollywood Reporter, going to be played by Helena Bonham Carter. Which seems so weird, even though I know the series attracts huge talent, so I shouldn't be surprised, but somehow I just never expected someone with Helena Bonham Carter's caliber to join this cast. I have a little bit of conflicting feelings about this, but overall, I think that she is a perfect successor to Vanessa Kirby. Like, I think the two of them, I can see the transition so clearly. And I also think that she and Olivia Colman playing off each other would be very, very interesting. So I'm very curious to hear how you feel about this.
Well, I still haven't had time to watch season two of The Crown. It is on my list. But yeah, so it's kind of hard for me to speak on whether I think she'll be good based on what we've seen of Princess Margaret in season two. But yeah. I mean, Helena Bonham Carter is great, you know? I think that she's she has a very specific style in a lot of ways. She's very interesting because she's not necessarily a method actress, but she does tend to like embody whatever role she kind of finds herself in. So it'd be interesting to kind of see her play something that's not so extravagant, you know?
Right. And, you know, I saw her like, because I was going to say she does play, you know, she is, I don't want to be like, oh, she's like Johnny Depp, because I know that's like has connotations. But in her acting style, she's a lot like Johnny Depp. But I recently or a few years ago saw her in Suffragette, where she was much more toned down and she was great. Like she was truly great. And I think what we might expect from her in The Crown, she's not going to be playing a wild, I mean, to the extent Margaret is a little bit of a wild character, so I'm sure they're going to play up to that, but she's also going to be playing a real human being. And I think the type of character that she did play in Suffragette proves that she's more than capable of that. So I'm very, very interested to see that. I also think it's interesting that she's almost 10 years older than Olivia Colman. So, I mean, I don't know, that doesn't really mean anything, but that's kind of funny since she's going to be playing Elizabeth's younger sister. I'm not sure how much of an age difference there is between them, but either way, interesting. And not that it really matters. I just thought it was a funny detail. But yeah, no, seriously, I don't know if you ever saw Suffragette, but she did really well in that.
That was with Carey Mulligan, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And among others.
Yes.
Yeah. And your boy, Ben, what's his face?
Ben Whishaw. Yeah. Okay. Then I did see that. Now it's all coming back to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I do love him.
Yes. Yeah. Margaret is like 4 years younger than Elizabeth. So it's like, it doesn't matter.
That is interesting though. It's always like, it's kind of like a testament to probably the power of makeup.
Right. Anything. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. But I'm honestly, I think this is good news. I'm sad to lose the actress we have now, especially Claire Foy.
I know.
I am definitely going to be tuning into these powerhouses. Like both of these actresses are like huge powerhouses. It's going to be really cool to see.
Yeah, I really love that was always the plan, you know, to like let the actresses kind of like they were going to age out of the role based on the story, like where the story was going. And I think it's really clever. I think it keeps things fresh.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to move on along with a little bit more Netflix news. This is kind of incredibly interesting, although I should preface this by saying nothing is set in stone yet. But we learned earlier last week that Netflix could be acquired by none other than Apple. So this is a story that was up on Business Insider originally, where they reported that analysts from Citi are predicting a 40% likelihood of Apple acquiring Netflix. So basically what that means is that they're kind of maybe like looking into it, but nothing is, like I said, set in stone. Mm-hmm. And this would definitely make for a very interesting choice for both companies, I think. But it also kind of makes sense in the grand scheme of things. Apple, you know, rolled out its music subscription service a few years ago. And ever since then, they've migrated from just being an online streaming platform to incorporating radio shows like Beats One, and also their own kind of original programming, so to speak. They have James Corden's Carpool Karaoke show on there. Planet of the Apps is kind of like a Shark Tank type reality show that's on there. They have a show coming up starring Octavia Spencer that centers around America's obsession with true crime podcasts like Serial in the works. So it definitely looks like Apple's interested in getting into the original programming game. And by partnering with Netflix or acquiring them, it would just be a really easy way to kind of do more of that, because Netflix, of course, has projects in development. And also, it would probably be a great way to jumpstart the streaming service of TV and movies and stuff, because, of course, you can rent and buy TV and movies on Apple, but they don't have a streaming, like a way to stream those things just yet.
Distribution wise, this certainly makes sense, particularly in light of Disney's upcoming, like, massive streaming service, because, you know, I feel like all the other companies are kind of sweating a little bit, thinking, how on earth are we ever going to compare with that? Because they just bought Fox as well. So Disney's exclusive streaming service is going to have everything. So if Apple can position itself as a kind of major, what's it called, like delivery of content, then certainly partnering with Netflix would make a lot of sense. And we can only hope that it doesn't affect the creative decisions too much, because I think Netflix's strategy right now is really solid. But it would be interesting to see, like, Apple TV, Netflix exclusive agreements, you know?
Yes, definitely. I totally agree. It's just, it's kind of hard to kind of understand what Apple's vision is right now, because they've been focusing on what they know, which is, I should mention that they have a lot of really wonderful documentaries that they've been putting out centered around artists that have been releasing music. I can't remember what they're called specifically, but they've done them with Harry Styles and Niall Horan and also Sam Smith, where they kind of follow them along through the process of working on their records. And it's really eye-opening if you're really into kind of the process of creating music like I am. So, but other than that, it is like, because nothing's ever really hit, we don't really know what their long-term game plan is for stuff like that. And so you would hope that if they're looking at Netflix, then they're interested in the original programming that Netflix is putting out, from documentaries to original movies to original shows, because Netflix has a lot of really, really wonderful content. So it would be sad to see that go.
Yes, absolutely. We'll keep an eye on this one and report further developments. All right, so staying in TV, but moving into the future. Look into the future. What do you see? It's Game of Thrones. This 8th season is a long way away. In fact, season 8 is not premiering until 2019. We don't yet know when in 2019 it will be, but it's certainly more than a year away as we write. Season 8 is obviously going, is as you know, going to be the final season. It's going to be 6 episodes long. But those episodes are rumored to be significantly longer than the episodes of past seasons. So at least there'll be a good amount of content to look forward to. They're already filming. I believe some actors have already wrapped filming, which that can't be right because they're still working on it. But they're certainly still filming it. Emilia Clarke has dyed her hair in honor of this final season. And this is exciting. I am wondering if George R.R. Martin is going to manage to have a new book out before this premieres.
One can only hope he's got time. I really hope he's not disheartened by the fact that he couldn't make his own goal and now he's become like the butt of the joke, kind of.
Yeah, I know.
I feel that really bad for him.
Disheartened.
Yeah, because, you know, we don't know how sensitive he is. He plays it off really well if he is like actually hurting inside, but.
Right. Well, the endings are going to be different anyway, so it's not like, I do know what you mean, but let's hope that the Winds of Winter, no, wait, yes. Winds of Winter. It's been in the works so long, I feel like it's already come out. But let's hope that it does come out before this. Anyway, it's a long time to wait. But
yeah. Do you know what? Really funny side story. I don't know if you've seen Logan Lucky.
No, I haven't seen it.
So there's this scene that takes place in a prison, without giving too much away from the movie. There's a scene that takes place in a prison, and the inmates have taken over, so they're trying to negotiate, and one of their demands is that they give them the new, like, a copy of Winds of Winter. so that they can like read it. And they're like, that's not out yet. And they're like, well, then how come, you know, my friend on the outside keeps telling me about stuff that hasn't happened in the books yet? So they think they're lying. Yeah, it's great.
That's such a specific joke. I love that.
Yeah. We have a little bit more TV news for you guys this week. This story comes from the BBC. The BBC is actually currently working on adapting Victor Hugo's Les Miserables into a miniseries, which is really, really cool because, you know, we've seen iterations of this story before. We've seen movies and musicals, most recently musicals, and so it's really fun to know that they're actually working from the actual source material to really kind of shine a spotlight on this classic tale. So the upcoming miniseries is set to be 6 parts in total, and they've actually already tapped a bunch of actors to portray some of the bigger parts in this series. A lot of these names are going to be familiar to you guys as well. Dominic West is set to play Jean Valjean, and then David Oyelowo is going to be playing Inspector Javert, and then Lily Collins will be playing Fantine. And on top of that, we also know who's going to be playing some of these other bigger supporting roles. Adil Akhtar and Olivia Colman will be playing Monsieur and Madame Thénardier. And meanwhile, Ellie Bamber will be playing Cosette. Josh O'Connor will be playing Maurice. And Aaron Kellyman will be playing Eponine. The series is going to be written by Andrew Davies, and he's had some experience adapting larger classic literature tomes before. He actually recently worked with the BBC and AMC Networks to adapt Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace into a miniseries. So it sounds like overall this project is in very good hands. The cast makes me super excited to see this iteration of Les Miserables hit the small screen as well. I think that they've tapped some really awesome people to portray these parts. And we don't know yet when it's going to start airing, but they are set to start filming next month in Belgium and in northern France. So it looks like maybe, hopefully, we'll see this in about a year.
This is so interesting.
I had no idea that this was like happening, honestly. You know, so usually you hear about things getting greenlit before you hear about the cast. And then all of a sudden I saw this pop up on Twitter and I was like, oh my God, what is this? So it should be really fun.
I mean, again, once people have asked like, oh, why do we need another adaptation, blah, blah, blah. But I think actually, funnily enough, particularly with something like Les Mis, I think there are so many opportunities to make a production of this your own. And the cast in particular is a big reason why it's a good thing to have more than one. Because, you know, obviously we had that big movie and it was a good movie and the people did great jobs in the roles. But I'm so excited to see these people take on the roles and sort of make them their own, you know. And it's going to be a miniseries. It's going to be really long, which kind of fits the book, which is like so long. I haven't read it, but I've seen the book. It's a big book. So I'm looking forward to this. I think this is good. I like BBC miniseries. They do good with those.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, again, like it's way different. Like, because obviously, like the musical, which I think a lot of people are very familiar with, especially given the movie that came out a few years ago, that's also an adaptation of Victor Hugo's actual tome, which I think I read part of or most of. I might have read an abridged version, but that was a very, very long time ago. So there is every possibility that this new miniseries will actually feature moments that, you know, were cut for time, because a musical is about maybe like 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2.5 hours. It's way different than miniseries that could potentially be 6 hours. So there's a lot of potential for character development in a completely different way. So that should be really fun, especially if you're a big fan of the story and the characters.
I'm excited. And for our final piece of news in this lineup, we have some, I mean, you guys, you know what it's going to be. Come on. We have 100 more stories to talk about this week. The CW has finally released its mid-season schedule, including the originals iZombie and a little show you might know called The 100. Unfortunately, it's not all good news, because The 100 is returning on April 24th, exactly 11 months to the day, which I guess is fitting since they're jumping so far ahead in time. They want us to feel it. they want us to feel like we're waiting. So there's a long time to wait until the 100 season 5. Black Lightning is premiering on January 16th. So that is very soon. And I have seen the first couple of episodes, you guys. This is a very good show. You need to check out Black Lightning. It is fantastic. iZombie is returning on February 26th. So that got a good slot. Life Sentence, which is another new show, premieres on March 7th. Dynasty and the Originals premiere on April 20th. And then April 24th is The 100. Now, a little bit of more info on The 100, because I think this is actually really interesting. First of all, they moved it to Tuesday at 9. It's a pretty good slot, and it's coming after The Flash now for the first couple of weeks, which I think is actually really good. It's interesting because there was some speculation that they were going to move it to Friday. They haven't. They've moved it to Tuesday, even though it's going to run through the summer, likely running into August. You know, if they don't take any breaks, that's going to take them through July 17th, I believe, and they are probably going to take a few breaks, so it's definitely height of summer that it's going to be airing, but it's a good time slot. It's also worth noting that Mark Pedowitz, who was his contract with the CW was actually extended recently, he has given a couple of interviews where he said pretty much that he is expecting The 100 to be renewed for season 6. So even though there's no official decision will be made until May, he's a big fan of the show. He says that basically people shouldn't worry, that Jason Rothenberg has a plan for season 6, maybe even beyond to season 7. Yeah, he's basically saying it's probably going to be renewed, which is really good news. And honestly, I'm not quite sure that I was fully expecting this, because not because I think they were going to cancel it, but just because I know Jason has talked about having a 5-year plan for the show. So I kind of had a suspicion that season 5 might be its natural conclusion. But it's with the time jump and everything, I'm actually quite glad that season 5 probably won't be the last, because it does seem like a little bit of a soft reboot, or at least like an opening up of the world to a completely new story. And it would be a shame if we only got that part of the tale for 13 episodes. So it's looking good, even though we have to wait a little bit longer. Having the knowledge that a renewal is a possibility, at least, I think is sort of soothing people's worries a lot in fandom. It's certainly making me a lot less worried than I might otherwise have been. But it's still such a long wait.
It is a long way. And then you said it's going to most likely bring the season to about July 17th.
If they take no breaks, yeah, that's going to be the finale. But I'm expecting they will take a few breaks, right? Like,
I don't know. But
they might not have to, actually, since it's the summer.
Well, I was just going to say that that's actually really smart PR for any Comic-Con appearances.
Because it's Comic-Con. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
if they don't, because that'll mean that the season finale will be right before Comic-Con. Everybody's going to be freaking out. And then they'll just, like, be there sitting like kings, you know.
I know.
As everybody freaks out over whatever he throws at us this season.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's very, I think it's a little bit of I'm also glad we have a premiere date finally. Unfortunately, we might still have to wait for the trailer, because with a April premiere date, they're going to hold the trailer until March. And I know Jason is trying to fight that decision, but it's not really his decision. And I know they are all super excited about showing the trailer to us, so it's a shame that now everyone was so excited and now it's like the air has gone out of the balloon a little bit. But we'll see what happens. Either way, like, we have stuff to entertain us until March, you know. We can put this one on the back burner a little bit and get excited about Black Panther and like all the other stuff that's coming out. So Those of you that are getting Annihilation can look forward to that. So, oh my gosh. Are you going to, have you checked out the Black Lightning pilot?
No, I haven't. But, you know, I did watch a pilot and it, okay. I watched a pilot for the new NBC series Rise, which stars Josh Radnor. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the trailer.
Yeah, so so I saw the pilot for that, and it just so happened that I saw the pilot right before the TCA panel for the show, and it's really, like, I really liked it. It kind of reminded me, like, obviously, like, there's a lot of Glee parallels there. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, Glee meets Friday Night Lights, just in the tone of, like, everything that's going on in the town with these different kids. It's, like, because it's definitely a drama. Glee was much more of, like, a dark comedy, if anything else. And Josh's character, who's an English teacher that ends up helming the musical theater department, is really, like, looking kind of to almost, like, be, like, the inspirer for these kids that, you know, a lot of which maybe had never thought that they could take center stage and stuff. So in that sense, it kind of reminds you a little bit of Friday Night Lights, because Coach was definitely like the motivator of keeping these kids, you know, inspired to do whatever.
Is it a little bit more like Smash?
You know what? I never saw Smash, so I wouldn't be able to tell you. Yeah.
Oh, you would like Smash.
Maybe you can watch the pilot and let me know.
Oh, maybe.
At some point.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But the show, I think that there's a preview. You know, sometimes they do a preview premiere before the show actually premieres. So I believe that if you're interested in this and you've seen the trailer for it, which has been circling around for a while, the first time it'll air on NBC is March 13th. That's the preview date. And then it actually premieres on March 20th officially.
All right.
So, yeah.
Cool. Okay, so this leads nicely into our TV show of the week segment, where we're going to be talking about a little bit of the TV we've been watching. I've been watching a little bit more than usual. I actually have two shows to talk about. And I want to start by talking about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I binged this weekend. I watched it, and then I immediately canceled my Amazon Prime subscription because it is trash. I don't know if you saw my tweet. Basically, I was so excited that I could finally get Amazon Prime over here, so I signed up for a trial, and it's true, I can watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Man in the High Castle and Amazon's other exclusive stuff, but when I tried to click, I was like, oh my god, so much stuff, this is so cool. I tried to click on something, it goes to buffer, and it plays 1 second, and then it goes, we're sorry, the content you have viewed is not available in your area. And this happens for, like, literally almost everything on their website. It is so frustrating because, like, at least with the other streaming sites, you know, they just show you what you can watch. So, like, in my Netflix, obviously doesn't have the same as the American Netflix, but it just shows me what I have. This one, it tricks me into thinking I have a lot. And then obviously some of it you have to pay for as well. I can't pay for it either because we're on the British Amazon, and you have to have a British card to pay for the paid stuff. So Danish people watching the British Amazon can't. Oh my god! It's so. Anyway, it's not what this is about. I just wanted to rage about that. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is marvelous. I loved it. I thought it was so good. I couldn't stop watching it.
I'm so glad you watched it and you loved it.
I did. The husband is awful, and yes. I want him to go away.
Of course.
The lead character, I forget her name.
Midge.
Midge is great. You know what is so funny about this character? And, like, I guess if you have to be like this if you're a comic, but, like, the way that she goes into every situation and strikes up a monologue about herself, I'm like, if I knew her in real life, that would bug the crap out of me. But because, you know, it's a TV show and I know it's all part of her comic journey, like, I don't mind it that much. But it's kind of funny. There's so much Gilmore Girls DNA in this. And I think, like, Midge herself is, like, the perfect amalgamation. I don't know how to say that word, but she's, like, the perfect blend between Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham, you know, merged into one. And then, weirdly, she has the voice of Jennifer Garner, which I can't quite explain why. So that's funny. Her version of Suki, who is played by the woman who was originally Suki, she's great. I love her. I think it is such a bingeable show, and it's such a feel good, even though it is a drama, like there's serious stuff going on. I feel like, and so much cringe. Oh my God, there were parts of it I could not watch. Like, you know, when she was bombing on stage, I physically recoiled from the screen. It was terrible. But other than that, I thought it was really, really good. And wonderful costumes, wonderful set design, you know, just candy for the eyes. And why don't you take one of yours and we can go one at a time.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Okay, I'll start with like the actual drama, I guess. I finally binged Big Little Lies on HBO. I know it was a long time coming and it was wonderful. It's so good, and just like the nuances in which domestic violence and rape are portrayed, and it's just really, really it's hard to watch in the way that like The Handmaid's Tale is hard to watch, but I think that I understand why everybody has been singing its praises, because the dialogue that this show sparks is so important. And it's 7 episodes, so if you're interested, you should definitely check it out. It'll grab you right away, and it was really good. I really enjoyed watching that.
You know, it's funny. I watched the first 10 minutes of it, and I actually turned it off because I thought it was annoying.
Oh, really?
I'm going to watch more of it at some point, but it was so weird. Like, it was actually before I watched Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I thought, oh, I'm going to check out Big Little Lies. And then, like, the opening credits, they really annoyed me.
Really?
I got, like, really, like, physically annoyed. And then when it started, that scene when they're driving and the kids and Reese Witherspoon, and I was like, oh, it's such a, like, I like Reese Witherspoon a lot, but this was a very Reese Witherspoon character, and I was like, oh my God, I don't have the patience for this. It was really weird. I don't know if I'm gonna like this show.
I could see that, because like a lot, you know, I think that the interesting thing about the way that this show is written is that these women have like these perfect lives, and they live in like in a situation that's kind of like really annoying to unfold.
Yeah, it's very
like,
cliche.
Yeah, it's a very affluent society. But at the same time, I feel like it didn't annoy me in the way that it might annoy other people, because in a lot of ways, my hometown has turned into that, what they perceive as, I think it's Monterey where they're living, which is a really affluent society where parents are a little bit too involved and it's a little bit too Stepford Wivesy. But, you know, the real story is kind of what lies underneath that perfect situation that you see unfold. So as you kind of dig further and further into these women and their lives and stuff like that, there are some characters that are more compelling than others. I don't think Reese Witherspoon is necessarily my favorite of the characters. I think that out of everybody that's involved in this cast, Nicole Kidman and Shailene Woodley really are like the most impressive in terms of their storylines and what they were able to do with the characters and what they undertook. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain, okay, but I could see why it, like, you know, off the bat, it might annoy some people, but.
All right. Yeah. All right. Let's try to give it another chance.
but maybe it's not for you. Maybe reading the book would be better, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I also just briefly wanted to talk about Runaways, Marvel's Runaways. I don't want to spoil anything. I was going to say what happened. Anyway, the finale was just made available over here, so I just watched it today, and it was very, very good. I think overall, the first season has been incredibly solid. I think that a couple of quote-unquote issues I have with it are not really issues, because I think they are honestly minor and very fixable. I think they do struggle with some of the parents making them complex enough for their actions to not seem totally random. I think the opening scene of the finale kind of encapsulated a lot of the issues I have with it, which is where you had all these people standing opposite each other and none of them really did anything. Like, they did things, but it was like, it was weirdly unmotivated, and it was, the parents especially were weirdly passive in this situation, and you kind of had this feeling where they were almost getting ready to fight, and it didn't really feel like there was enough emotional stake for especially for the parents to fight their children, but it's even for the children to fight their parents. Like, I'm not sure I totally buy that they would physically fight them. Anyway, so that was kind of a thing I had. I was like, there's some complexity missing to these relationships a little bit. But I do think when they get it right, like I've talked about before, they get it very right. I think Tina continues to be the standout parent for me. And the way that the relationships are developing, I think is very, very sweet and very good and very interesting. And the dinosaur is now my favorite character, just if anyone's keeping track. And I am very curious where it goes from here, because I think they took a big leap forward and sort of set the wheels in motion for the show to develop into something very different from what it is right now. I really like that Carolina is stepping up to take more of a central role. I really hope they do something to expand on Jonah's character, because right now he is really just a villain who doesn't really seem like he has much of a purpose or a plan or a reason for doing what he does. It seems a little bit cartoon villainy, which makes sense because he's lifted from a comic book, but he seems less real than all the other characters do, I think, which is a shame. And I am excited for season 2. It was renewed, so we're officially getting a season 2. So yay! I guess I can cancel my HBO Nordic subscription now and wait for it to come back.
Amazing.
You need to catch up on
the
show.
I do need to catch up. It's on, I know I have like everything on my list, but like legitimately it's on my list.
That list.
Well, I know. Yeah. But one thing I did watch, actually the other thing I watched this week on listener recommendation, a bunch of you guys tweeted at me and said I needed to watch One Day at a Time, which is... My mom actually told me this. I was watching it and she came in and I was like, I'm watching this show. And she was like, oh, that's probably the remake from the 80s sitcom. And lo and behold, it is. I've never seen the 80s sitcom, but she was, I guess, a big fan back in the day. It starred Valerie Bertinelli. I guess it was the big breakout role for her. So maybe some of you will be familiar with that. But the Netflix iteration of One Day at a Time is just so lovely. It is a sitcom, but it gets so real. It centers around a Cuban family, and the mom is actually an ex-army vet, and she's raising two kids with her mother, who is played by the iconic Rita Moreno, who is one of a handful of EGOT winners, and also probably most well-known for playing Anita in West Side Story. And she's like, that's really what hooked me, honestly. Like, I had no idea she was in this. I kind of just went into the pilot blind because so many of you guys, like I said, had recommended it to me over the course of the last year. And also most recently in our Colin episode too. And as soon as grandma came on, or abuelita, they call her, which is the Spanish word for grandma, like I was just sold because she's like so perfect and so funny. And like, oh my God, I fell in love with the show. It was so easy to binge. And I have seen the full second season, by the way. It comes out at the end of this month on January, I think January 23rd, January 27th. But thank you, Netflix, for having that up on your screen or site, because I saw it and it's lovely. So if any of you are looking forward to that, just know that I give it 2 thumbs up. It's going to give you a lot more of the same things, which is, you know, kind of comedy, but also tackling a lot of these bigger issues that they've dealt with in the first season, from PTSD to depression and anxiety to there's even like a coming out story and storylines about like identity and identifying as Cuban and what that means, like living in a white society and stuff like that. So it's really great. It's really, really well done. And if you're looking for a really wonderful, heartfelt comedy to watch on Netflix, I highly recommend. You guys were all right. I loved it. It was so good.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. Actually, speaking of that, a little bit of a preview. I have been checking out the screeners that are up for Altered Carbon, that sci-fi series that I was really excited about on Netflix. And I've watched like 3 episodes so far, and the reviews are embargoed until January 22nd. So I guess I'll talk more about it when I get back from Canada. But Yeah, no, it's really interesting. It's good so far. Not enough Dacian Lackman, which is not a spoiler because it says on IMDb how many episodes she's in, and it's less than I thought it was, and I'm very disappointed by that. But other than that, yeah, exciting times. More to come, dot, dot, dot. And with that, we're going to move into listener feedback. We have a bunch of tweets from you guys. Do you want to get started with the first one? Get start.
Sure.
You want to get start.
It's always really weird to read tweets aimed at myself.
Yeah, sure.
Hannah tweeted at me. Sorry.
I linked the wrong one.
That's okay. I know what this is about. So over the weekend, I talked about how one of the books that I picked up during the holiday season was a book called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Rennie Edo Lodge. I was not originally going to talk about this book on Hype because it's a stretch to say that it fits into the fabric of our show, but in a lot of ways it does, because I feel like we have a lot of really important discussions in here about representation, and race like kind of falls into that category. So just because Hannah tweeted at me and said, tell us your thoughts on Hype about this book, I'm thinking of requesting it as our next book club book, but don't know much about it yet. I'm going to tell you what I think right now. So I'm about 100 pages in. It's not very long. For those of you that don't know what this book is about, I feel like the title is definitely like... That's a big reason why a lot of people have heard about this book, like even if you don't know what it's about. So Rennie Edo Lodge is actually an award-winning journalist. And in 2014, she posted a piece on her blog called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. And the post went viral, and for different reasons. It really hit a nerve, you know, for people that were either, you know, of like their minorities themselves, saying like, this is like the post that I needed. Like, this is exactly how I feel. There were people that, you know, were white that were really distraught over her decision not to talk or engage in discussions about race, either because they felt uncomfortable or because she thought she was wrong. But either way, what happened after she wrote this post and it went viral is that she realized that there was actually a need to have this discussion and to kind of get to the root of why the idea of this sparked such a nerve. And so the book kind of features her taking a deep dive into the history of class and race, whitewash feminism, Black history, the history of race in terms of politics, and it actually centers mostly around the UK, like the subject of race in the UK, because that's where she's based. But I still think that it's a really important read for anybody, because, you know, obviously, like, I'm American, but we have our own history with racism and race and race relations here, but we don't get to hear a lot about how a lot of that has been covered up or erased across the pond in England, where they have their own history of race and stuff like that. So it's really eye-opening to kind of read about that part of it as well. But I think that the title of this book is meant to be salacious for a reason. And I kind of think that, like, I've been reading this book a lot, like, in public, because usually, like, if I'm reading a book, I'll just, like, take it with me to coffee shops or whatever on the bus. And no other book I've ever read has has garnered such attention from strangers. And I think that that's really important. So if the title of this book, Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, makes you feel anything, whether it makes you nod your head and like, yes, that sounds like it's a book for me, or it makes you a little bit uncomfortable, then I think that that means it's probably worth picking up, because the point of it is that race makes people uncomfortable and discussions about race make people uncomfortable. But it's important to have those conversations and open up the dialogue, because if we don't, then change is never going to happen. So yeah, so that's my long-winded, rambly thoughts about the first 100 pages of this book. Hannah, if you have any more questions, you can tweet at me and let me know if you end up picking it up for your book club.
Cool. That's really interesting. Moving on now, we have a tweet from Abby Lee who says, will you ladies be doing a The 100 Season 4 special, maybe with Merrima? I know you're busy with Merlin, but we do have time to kill before our April release. We certainly do that. That's an interesting question. We haven't decided whether or not to do it. I would love to do it. I know we talked a little bit about the show about what we might... I know we talked a little bit before the show about what we might be doing as we get closer to the premiere, but certainly I did a rewatch recently, but with an April premiere, I need to do another one or I'm going to have forgotten everything. So if we have time, depending on where we are with Merlin and stuff, I think it would be really nice to get back to it and do sort of an in-depth breakdown. I haven't even done a full season review of the season. When it ended, I was so burned out from all the features and reviews that I've been doing over the course of the season that I couldn't fathom tackling the whole season at once. So at least there probably will be that, if nothing else. But we'll let you know what ends up happening.
Kathleen tweeted at us and said, I moved on to binging Gossip Girl and I'm confused. Mid-season 2, am I supposed to care about who Gossip Girl is?
Intermittently,
yeah,
yes.
I don't think that she, like, the whole point about Gossip Girl is that you're not supposed to care until you're supposed to care. Like, specifically, yeah. Gossip Girl the entity, not Gossip Girl the show. Because if you didn't care at all, then you shouldn't be, I guess.
I think the first time they tried to make us care who Gossip Girl is, I got really excited because I was like, oh my God, game changer. The call is coming from inside the house. But then it kind of just went on and became ridiculous. So I think you will enjoy the show more if you don't care who Gossip Girl is, to be honest with you. And just watch for the story and the clothes. Laura Morrow says, I'm starting to think the movie gods are out to get me. I am never going to see Star Wars. I tried to go today and my movie theater had no power. They had no force. Have you watched it yet, Laura? I cannot believe that you still haven't managed to watch it. I hope you haven't been spoiled yet. And I hope you do manage to watch it. It's going to come out on DVD soon. You can watch it at home.
That's a good way to look at it. Shauna Evans says, do you guys read Rania Telgemeier? I think that's how you pronounce it.
Telgemeier?
Yeah. Telgemeier's awesome graphic novels. I read Drama this morning and nearly cried with how cute it was. You would love it. Some weeks ago, I recommended Tim Federle's The Great American Whatever, but there was all guest hosts on that week, and I don't think you guys got the memo. It's very similar to Simon versus The Homo Sapiens Agenda. Highly recommend. I might have forgotten about that, but thank you, Shauna, for reminding me, because I'm going to put it on my Goodreads right now, so I don't forget.
The Great American Whatever. Interesting. Mr. Glass. I have never heard from Mr. Glass before. Hello, Mr. Glass. He has a recommendation. He says, Carrie Fisher roasts George Lucas at AFI Life Achievement Award. I know I'm a week behind, but this is one of my favorite Carrie Fisher moments. And he sent a link as well. I'll retweet that if I haven't yet.
Yes.
Everyone should watch it.
That's a good one. I really like that one.
Yeah.
That's the one where she talks about no underwear in space, I think. Like, that's the first time I ever heard her talk about it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Think that's the one, yeah. I have seen that one before, actually. That was a very good
one. Maybe I'll rewatch it, though, because it's good. The Lady Ash says, to Game of Thrones final season. Wait, I wanted to bring it up for the 2018. Oh, because we called the Lady Ash. She was our last caller, if Selena left them in order. she continues, but there were only rumors then it would be delayed another year. Boo! I guess they're going to test their patience with that one.
They are. Stephanie Meyer. No, Stephanie Merrill, equally, if not better. I'm like a year late to this party, but Breath of the Wild is so beautiful. I played for 5 hours yesterday, and Mario Kart 8 is pretty great too. So many tracks. I actually played a little bit of Breath of the Wild today as well, Stephanie. I had to test out my brother's giant television, and I will be playing when I'm editing this. So yeah, it's wonderful. I love it. I just beat the Great Beasts Ruta, I don't know, something like that, the elephant. It was tough. That's it.
Lindsay Howard says, I somehow missed an episode of Hype back in November, so I'm listening to it now, and of course it's the one where I just like lost the ability to speak. And of course, it's the one where they answered my Twitter question. She wrote back to us on Twitter and said that we answered something about Fall TV. So I'm really glad that that helped, Lindsay, even if you got the answer super, super late.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad she did listen so she didn't think we were ignoring her.
I know. We do try to, like, answer everything, but every once in a while, I'm sure we miss something, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we have a couple of emails as well. We have the first one from Elizabeth. Do you want to get that one?
Yes. Elizabeth says, hey girls, the call-in episode was super fun to listen to. I was on vacation, but if you do another one in a few months, I will definitely be interested. I also went to see Jumanji for my birthday, actually, and it was super funny. I loved that it flowed really well and they didn't overdo the whole, oh no, everyone is going to die, whether you know they aren't going to die. It just kind of wrapped up nicely. I was actually anti-going since I absolutely hated the original, but I'm really glad I did since it was a good time at the movies. Selena, you're coming to Vancouver for the 100 convention? I'm not going, but now I wish I was just so I could meet you. I hope when you do come, you enjoy the city. It's a pretty beautiful place. You girls are the best. Liz from Vancouver.
Oh, I'm really so nice. Excited. This means, I'm going to go to the Anthropology Museum.
Ooh, this means nothing to us because you're going to be so busy, but we'll actually be on the same time zone when you're here.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm going to have such a jet lag.
I know, oh my gosh, I can only imagine. That's hard.
Anyway, Jennifer says, hi girls, love the show. You guys keep me updated and make me sound so knowledgeable about current trends. Just wondering, following Christmas and New Year's, if you have any favorite board games to play. I recently discovered Pandemic and am yet to beat the darn virus, and Resistance, which are such great games, and wondered if you had any other games you enjoyed playing this festive period. Keep on hyping Jen. Gen X. You should call yourself that. Yeah, I love board games. I haven't played any in a while, but when I do, it's usually some variety of the Settlers. The Settlers Europe is actually, I will dare to say, better than the Settlers main games. It's just, I don't know, it's more enjoyable and it's harder to like sabotage each other. So it's like, not that that's necessarily better, but it becomes more about strategy than just trying to break other people's games, which I feel like the normal Settlers sometimes falls into, at least with the people I played with. I'm sure I have some others. I can't think of them now. How about you?
I
love quiz games. I usually play like quiz question games.
Me too. I was gonna say I really like some of my favorites are like classic ones are Trivial Pursuit and Cranium.
Yeah.
Cranium is kind of like, have you played Cranium before? It's kind of like a little bit of everything, but I really like it a lot. And Scattergories is kind of like, so I guess I like puzzle games, I guess, though I'm sensing a trend. Cards Against Humanity, if you're with the right crowd, is also really, really fun, too. But Jennifer, I think this is so funny that you emailed this question in because it just reminded me that I got sent a board game right at the beginning of the holiday season from some lovely PR reps, and I completely forgot to talk about it on the regular show. But if you guys are subscribed to our Patreon and you watched my pop culture gift guide video, you'll know that I talked about it on there. So it's just like, I think it's so funny that she asked about this because it's almost like the PR gods told her to in some capacity. So Dan and Phil are YouTubers. YouTube, there's a lot of good people on YouTube. There's a lot of bad people on YouTube. But if you're looking for some fun, wholesome, non-problematic content, highly recommend checking them out. It's just really good fun. They also have a gaming channel. So creating a board game kind of makes sense because they are just really into them. And that's what they did this year. It's called Truth Bombs. I got it, again, as part of a PR package, but I actually played this game and I thought it was really fun. I took it with me to a few white elephant parties and everybody had a lot of fun with it. So 10 out of 10 would recommend if you're looking for something a little bit newer. So basically how the game works is everybody gets a sheet of paper and then you put down a bunch of these questions. And the questions are like really silly, like if you had like a theme song, what would the theme song be? Or like, who's this person's secret crush? And the aim of the game is to secretly answer these questions about whatever person's sheet you have in front of you. And then they get read aloud and the person picks their favorite answer and who they think wrote the answer. So if you're playing with a lot of creative people, you can have a lot of fun with it. And it's really, it can be really funny, or it can be kind of like a Bernie situation, you know, depending on if the person knows you really, really well and wants to embarrass you. But yeah, anyway, I'm not explaining it really well, but I'll leave a link for Selena to include in the show notes if you guys want more information on that. Sorry for not bringing this up earlier. I feel like I did something wrong. But, you know, like PR packages are always like a recommended way to maybe explain things to people. So yeah. But yeah, if you guys are looking for a new board game, that's one that I got sent to me. And thank you, PR gods, for sending me things. That's really nice of you.
I know. I wish the PR gods would send me stuff.
I think they just have my number. Like, every once in a while, I don't even know. It's actually kind of scary because I don't know where my address would be. You know, I'm assuming it's somebody I've worked with before. Mm-hmm. But because I don't like, sometimes you just have to request materials. I didn't request this. It was just like, hey, we saw that you wrote about our people and you like them. So here, have this board game. And I was like, thanks, guys. That's really nice. But also, how did you get my address? That's weird. So I don't know. It was a magical surprise, I guess. But it was also a little creepy. Okay, so we have one more email here from Yannick, who was on our call-in show. He writes, Selena and Pam, I can hereby confirm that there is indeed a real dragon. Oh my God. Beneath the Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland Paris. This is amazing. Yannick, thank you so much for confirming this news. This means a lot. He continues, she was unfortunate. Oh, it's a she. Interesting. She was unfortunately hibernating when I tried to get a picture for you guys, so I wasn't allowed in the cave. Therefore, I took a crappy photo of the sinus, proof of her existence. I've also provided a link from YouTube so you can see what she actually looks like. This is so exciting. He continues, as for Merlin reenactment, I'm totally game. The question is, who will be Merlin should Arthur appear? What about Gaius? In other words, if any of you manage to stop by in the foreseeable future and I'm still here, let me know so I can let you into the park after 3 years of you providing me with entertainment as well as reading my rambling emails. It's the least I can do. Happy New Year once more, Yannick. That's so sweet.
Oh, that's so sweet. We really weren't fishing for it. It was just a joke, but thank you
so much.
That's
really, really
and
nice,
and wonderful
though.
About the dragon.
Look, I'm just happy that he, like, sent a picture, I'm assuming, and also this video clip.
Yeah, the video, yeah.
I guess I could have, like,
you should watch it.
YouTubed this myself when I was trying to figure out if my friend was, like, actually trying to pull a fast one on me, but
yeah,
it's okay.
Now you know.
Now I know.
You have it
thank
straight
you,
from the Mickey's mouse. The Mickey's mouse.
The Mickey's mouse. My curiosity has been quenched. I can just rest easy from now on.
Yes. All right, so that perfectly wraps up this show. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in to us. If you want to write to us, you can do that by emailing us, hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypable.com for commenting. We suggest that you tweet us or email us because those are the most common ways, but you're welcome to get in touch with us in any of the ways listed above. We, of course, also have our Patreon, which is where if you subscribe, $2 a month, you help keep our show running, you help cover our expenses, and then you get 2 videos a month, you get bonus features, discussions every week, you get access to giveaways and all kinds of fun stuff. And this week's bonus segment is going to be our Merlin pilot commentary. Oh my gosh, it's gonna be so fun. I'm so excited. We're gonna watch. This is the first time I've watched the pilot since, like, I don't know, 2012.
Me
at some
too.
Point I'm sure I watched it then, but yeah, I haven't watched it since, so I forgot everything. It's gonna be great.
I can't believe it's finally happening.
I know, after all this time, hashtag always Merlin.
Oh.
I can't wait, and I can't wait to share that with you guys. And that is, if you are a Patreon subscriber, you can go to patreon.com/hypepodcast and find that. And if you're not a Patreon subscriber but you still want to participate in the Merlin rewatch, we will be doing the pilot discussion next week, so you can watch the pilot now. It's loud. It's okay. If you wanna watch it with our commentary, can't promise that will be a better experience.
Just imagine us like policing all our listeners. Like, you can watch the pilot and the pilot only.
I know. You can watch it. You can watch more.
But yeah. If you want to contribute to our upcoming discussion, send in your thoughts about the pilot episode. Because we will need those for our formal pilot discussion, which we'll be doing very soon.
Actually, yes, we will be recording them over the weekend. So you'll get this on Thursday. And if you have any thoughts on the pilot, then send them in to us soon. Just, you know, wink, wink.
Like, send them in by Saturday.
Yeah, please.
Please.
All right, and we will give you guys further instructions in upcoming weeks. Until next time, have a great week, everyone, and I will speak to you in 2 weeks. My name is Lena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, guys. Bye.